Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, we visit with two Billings chefs, Joni Swords and Travis Dimson. They will teach us how to prepare a main course and dessert for these holidays. We first go to Harper and Madison to learn how to make cinnamon bread pudding with pastry chef Joni. Then, we go to local kitchen and bar to learn how to prepare pan-seared duck breasts with shaved Brussels sprouts and mashed sweet potatoes from executive chef Travis. Best of all, both experts will give you some tips on how to successfully serve your holiday feast. Now, let's head to the residential neighborhood gym near the hospital corridor. This morning, a week before Christmas, we are at the kitchen of Harper and Madison, where we will be with baker extraordinaire Joni Swords. She'll be telling us how to make her delectable bread pudding. Well, what do we have in front of us here?
I have the ingredients for our cinnamon bread pudding. This is a way for us to use our leftovers here at Harper and Madison. So we use our leftover caramel rolls or our leftover wheat bread or leftover croissants to make the bread pudding. So I have cubes of bread. They're large chunks. I have 10 cups of those. I have heavy cream and half and half, brown sugar, white sugar, eggs, and vanilla. And that's all that goes in there. It's just all good stuff. And I like to use a big bowl because we're going to mix it up. I start by mixing my sugars, the dry ingredients, together first. And then, once that's mixed up, I'm going to add a little bit of cinnamon, 1 tablespoon. I like to mix the dry ingredients first, just to make sure that everything's evenly distributed in there. Once that's mixed up, I'm going to add the egg yolks and egg whites, heavy cream, and half and half. Our motto here is never underestimate the power of sugar and cream. It makes everything delicious. I'm going to just grab a whisk here. A lot of our recipes are really simple, and we use really high quality ingredients, and we found that they don't need to be complicated if you use good stuff. I actually never tasted bread pudding until I opened Harper and Madison. And this recipe came from my first chef, Shane Weigel. And my dad used to eat bread pudding when I was a kid, and I found it very, very strange that something sweet could be made out of bread. And he would dump tons of cream on it and eat that. And I didn't find it appealing in any way. When I tasted Shane's bread pudding, I was hooked, and it's one of my favorite things. So I've poured the wet ingredients over the bread, and I'm tossing it. I'm gonna let this soak for about 30 minutes, and after 15 minutes, I'll toss it again, just to redistribute the liquid through the dry ingredients. The caramel rolls that I used are pretty old, and so they need to absorb some liquid. All right. When this is done soaking, I'm gonna spray a 9x13 inch pan and pour the mixture into there, press it down lightly. I'm going to cover it with foil and then put it into the oven. After the hour, I'll remove the foil and cook it for an additional 10 minutes so it gets a little brown and crusty on the top.
So how is the bread pudding served at Harper and Madison?
We serve it warmed with our homemade caramel sauce, which is delicious. The caramel sauce also has a big following. People love that. A lot of people know to ask for extra caramel sauce. So you're getting a double dose. When we use the caramel rolls, of course it has the caramel sauce mixed into the dough. So I think that's one reason why the bread pudding is so popular, all the extra caramel in there.
For this reason, Joni has made a decision. And to benefit from this, we all need to become Joni's good friend.
I decided what to give my friends for Christmas. I'm going to do a homemade gingerbread ice cream with brandy sauce. The brandy sauce recipe came from poets, and I make it every year. We sell it here. It goes well with everything. I would eat it on anything. Bread pudding, chocolate, toast, a spoon. So I'm pretty excited about that decision.
Just think, brandy caramel sauce and oatmeal at breakfast, and over a grilled peanut butter jelly sandwich at lunch. Life can be so sweet.
So tell me what's going on for the holidays this year. You've always created all these amazing treats, and I see on the counter that there are white chocolate covered Oreo cookies. Is that what I'm seeing over there?
Yes, and they're really beautiful.
On the counter is a huge sheet of Oreo cookies that are cloaked in white chocolate. What makes them even more special is the holiday floral design imprinted on top, and the chocolate is thin and delicate. As Joni said, they're just beautiful.
That's why I make them. It's not something, of course, we don't make Oreos here, but I love the presentation, and it's something that is suitable for gifts. We try and package a few things so that people can use them as gifts. I'm making our peppermint meringues, which are really popular. And Saturday, I dipped about 300 truffles. So those will be packaged up in a really nice box for the holiday season. I only make them on Valentine's Day and Christmas. So get them while you can.
Well, and we're nearing that time, but next year we'll have to think about ordering from you and having the cookies. So you've made some changes on your menu. What's going on now?
We try and change the menu 3 or 4 times a year and try to offer some seasonal goodness. So for the fall, we brought back one of our most popular sandwiches, the Harvest Moon, which is butternut squash, green apple, cranberry Stilton cheese, and spiced pepitas, with an option of adding andouille sausage. That's something that people ask for every fall. They've come to know that it's going to be on our menu. It's really popular. And then we've also changed our format a little bit so that you can order, we have several selections that you can order either as a wrap or a salad. And that's been really welcomed by people. They like the option of that. Again, we're using some seasonal items like the beet salad, the sprout salad, and the pear salad. So pears seem to be better in the fall than they are during the summer. Beets, we've had that salad, and we can't take it off. It's way too popular. Brussels sprouts are kind of a trendy vegetable right now, so we're proud to have that on the menu too.
So the holidays are upon us, and we're celebrations. You have some special events that are going on here in your newly remodeled place. And what? Tell me about them.
We've had a lot of corporate dinners and private dinners for Christmas parties. We're having an evening at the Madison next Saturday, which is my favorite event. We sort of turn the place into a nightclub, and we have live music by the Big Sky Trio this time, and we'll serve a 3-course dinner. The folks from the Edgar Bar come down and do craft cocktails and serve beer and wine for us. It's a really fun event. It's pretty magical in here at night. And it allows us to stretch a little bit. My chef is extremely talented and excited to be able to offer things that he can't do during the day. It's fun.
Who is your chef these days?
His name is Brantley Walker Rutledge. He's very young and probably one of the finest chefs I've ever known. I can't believe that we get to have him here every day. I am grateful. He's very young, but he's taught himself. And he just has a very educated palate and some mad cooking skills.
Where did you find him?
He found us. He came from Bozeman. He had experience there at the Sola Cafe. And when we were remodeling, he contacted me and said he would be moving to Billings. I hired him just to be part of the kitchen staff. It didn't take long to realize that he had the desire and the drive and the talent to manage the kitchen, and I just let him go, and it works out really well.
So my final question is, now during the holidays, as we embark on all these events that we need to do and special treats that we need to prepare, what are some hints that you can provide?
I think planning ahead, keeping it simple. Don't read too many magazines. You know, when you see something on the cover of a magazine and you think, I should do that. A lot of times it's not practical. I have a great story about trying to make something on the cover of Gourmet magazine, a white chocolate frou-frou cake. This was a long time ago, and it had white chocolate ruffles. It was a 3-day process, and at the end of the 3 days, I ended up putting my fist in the middle of it. I was so frustrated, and it wasn't turning out. It was awful, but I learned a big lesson. It's like, don't try and do things that you don't have a skill set for, and I didn't have a skill set at that time, so...
Well, certainly these days, I'm sure that you could tackle that and it'd be super easy to put together.
You know, I hope so. I think I would be able to do it now. Yeah.
Well, and I believe that Joni practices what she's preaching, because in front of us is her amazing binder that has true recipes that have worked for you for years and years. And these are baked goods that you go back to.
Right. Right. Nothing is too complicated in our binder, because people come in and they need to be trained and they need to be able to do it. I hire people that don't have any experience, and it works out because our recipes are simple and good.
So are you practicing the Alice Waters principle of, if someone has the willingness to come in and learn how to bake, that you might just take them on?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
At Chez Panisse in Berkeley, back in the 1970s, Alice Waters started a local food movement, mainly showcasing vegetables, but also providing a place for those with little or no cooking experience, a place to learn. Here in Billings, we have our own Alice.
Well, thank you so much. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you.
Welcome back to Flavors Under the Big Sky. Now, come with me to the West End of Billings.
We are at the local kitchen and bar with executive chef Travis Stimson, and today he's going to teach us how to do a seared duck breast for the holidays. Thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to have you start and just take the listeners through and how you're going to just proceed and prepare a great meal for the holidays.
Excellent. So the first thing that I'm going to cover is going to be our sweet potato. We're going to do a mashed sweet potato, and a lot of times the mistake that people make is by boiling their sweet potato. So there's a ton of sugar in sweet potatoes, and if you boil it, you boil a lot of that sugar out. By boiling a lot of that sugar out, you miss the flavor component that you're trying to get from your sweet potato. So ideally what you want to do is roast that sweet potato. Most people are going to put oil and salt, pepper on the outside skin. I don't recommend doing that. The reason I don't do that is because as it roasts with the oil on it, it will adhere to the flesh of the potato. If you don't put any oil on it, as that roasts, it's going to separate. So you'll be able to peel that skin off a lot easier as time goes by. So that'll go in the oven. You want that to roast for about an hour, hour and a half at 375 degrees. Then after you have that in the oven, the next thing that you're going to start is going to be your duck breast. For duck breast, the first thing that you want to do is score the fat that's on the top of the breast. So you'll take the breast itself, fat side up, and then you want to take your knife blade and you want to do cross hatch across the top of it. So you're going to take just the very point of your knife and drag it over the fat. You don't want to go deep into it to where you actually get into the flesh. If you do get into the flesh, it's going to be more difficult to render out the fat, and you're going to end up cooking the center of the duck farther than you want it to go. So once you have your score marks on the top, the next thing you're going to do is heat your pan up. You put a little bit of oil in there. You can use any oil that you like. My preference has always been canola oil because it has absolutely no flavor component that comes across. Grapeseed oil is fine, peanut oil is fine. You can use lard, you can use butter. Whatever your own personal preference is, works fine. My strong recommendation is always towards canola oil because it has very, very high smoke point and you don't get any cross flavor from whatever that oil is. So once you're getting ready to put your duck breast in, the first thing you're going to do is salt and pepper it. So a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper over the top of the duck so that your fat is evenly coated. Then that fat side is going to be what you're going to put down in the pan first. Your pan should be nice and hot so that when you lay that down in the pan, that fat is going to start to sizzle and sear. Now those score marks that you made in the top of that, when you put that down, those are going to start to open up a little bit. As those open up, it's going to allow the fat to start to cook out away from the flesh. Fat acts as an insulator, and so as you cook, you're not actually cooking the underneath side of that duck where the fat adheres to the pan. You're cooking the fat itself, and it takes a long, long time to cook it to center. By scoring that fat, you've allowed that opening to render fat out. And by rendering the fat out, what I mean is that as that cooks, that fat is going to cook out and into the pan. As that cooks into the pan, you're going to allow the meat at center to cook at a faster consistent temperature, so you'll reach the temperature setting that you're looking for quicker than if you were to leave the fat whole. So scored, that's gonna start to sear in that pan, and it isn't gonna take very long. You're gonna wanna turn it in just a quarter of a turn. Where it laid down in the pan, that's gonna start to cool down. Quarter turn is gonna allow you a chance to touch more pan surface that's hot again, so it starts to sear evenly on the outside edge. As that starts to sear, you're gonna make sure that your pan stays hot over the heat. And then the next step that we're gonna go to is gonna be to turn it, and we'll go into the basting process. Basting is extremely important during the rendering phase, especially when you've made the cross hatch marks in the top of the duck's fat. So those cross hatch marks that we've made, when you turn it, you can see this light sear that's on the top of the duck. So the fat has started to get a nice brown color, and this is only in 2 minutes time. You haven't put in a lot of cook time at this point. Then, once that duck breast starts to sear and that fat side is back up, you want to tilt your pan and take spoonfuls of that hot fat and spoon it back over the top of your duck breast. As you dump the fat over the top of that, you're going to notice that the duck breast starts to bubble up. That's a good thing. That means all that heat is cooking on the outside of it and it's pulling it up so it's dense and a tight muscle again. As that muscle tightens, it's going to allow the heat residually to cook through to center. You'll keep spooning that fat over it for a good 2-3 minutes. Once you've gone on that long, you can then either turn the duck breast back over so the flesh side is up and then continue that basting process, or you can put it in the oven. It takes probably about 7 to 8 minutes before you have it cooked to medium rare at center. But you can also go fast and get it into the oven. It'll cook much quicker that way, take less time, and it's got an even heat. And you don't have to spend all that time basting that fat over the top of the duck breast. What we're gonna do today is gonna be the quicker method. So we're gonna throw this duck breast into the oven and let it finish out. Now as that sits in the oven, the next thing that we're gonna go to is going to be our Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts don't take very long to cook at all, and the amount of time that they're gonna take to cook should work beautifully with the amount of time that that duck needs to finish out in the oven. So you're again gonna grab a pan, put it down on your stovetop, and a little bit of oil. Same oil that you use for the duck breast. You want canola, so it's nice neutral oil, doesn't have any flavor or anything like that. Then you're gonna take your Brussels sprouts. Now, a lot of people don't like Brussels sprouts. They think, oh, they're so bitter, they're so sour, they're one of my favorite vegetables. And the reason that most people don't like them is because they're generally improperly cooked. If you bring them to a heavy, heavy boil in a pan first, what happens during that process is a lot of the sulfur cooks out of them. That sulfur is what makes them bitter. To get away from that sulfur flavor, you want caramelization. Caramelization happens when the sugar builds up and starts to cook in the bottom of the pan. That caramelization will happen if you pan sear them instead of roasting them. So what we're going to do is take our Brussels sprout and then just take our knife and very thinly shave our Brussels sprout all the way down to the very base. You're going to grip the base of it and cut with your knife in nice steady motion straight through and get these tiny thin shaved pieces. So that ideally, as soon as it hits the pan, it starts to cook. The faster it cooks, the better it goes, because you're gonna caramelize it quicker. Now, if you're trying to cook whole Brussels sprouts, of course, it takes a long time to get that caramelization to show up. So our pan should be nice and hot now. So you'll take your thinly shaved Brussels sprouts, throw those into the pan and allow those to sear. As soon as they hit the pan, you should hear that sizzle and pop. That's good, that's what you want, because that caramelization is gonna happen immediately. After they've hit the pan, the next thing that you're gonna add is gonna be your onion. And that's just about a quarter of a diced onion to about 15 thinly shaved Brussels sprouts. Once you get that onion in there, then you're gonna wanna grab the handle of your pan. And if you are capable, you're gonna start doing the chef's toss, which is when you pitch the pan forward, toss all the vegetables on the inside of the pan so that they flip over and over on themselves. If you're not at that skill level, it's okay to use tongs or a spatula to get them there. We're gonna toss these so that all that heat spreads evenly throughout the Brussels sprouts that we're cooking. And in a very short period of time, you should see that caramelization start to happen in the Brussels sprouts. They're gonna start to brown nice and even. You don't wanna leave them sit for too long. If they do sit for too long, anything over a minute, they're gonna start to burn because the sugar content is high enough in them, they cook very, very quickly. Now, once you've got good caramelization on that and everything has started to wilt down, you can cook them as done as you like. I like mine with a pretty heavy amount of caramelization on them, but there's nothing wrong with going light on the caramelization. With these ones, where they've been cooking for about 1.5-2 minutes now, that's good caramelization. You're gonna have good flavor development at that point. If you want them to go a little bit farther, you can. Don't go anything over about 4 or 5 minutes though, otherwise they're gonna be a little too far done and they'll start to get bitter on you again. Once you are finished with your Brussels sprouts, you're going to turn the heat off and then toss them in the pan so that it cools the pan down. And then you're just going to set those onto the back burner. The next step that we're going to go to now is going to be our mashed sweet potato. We'll actually go through the mashing process now. So with that mashed sweet potato, you're going to want to get a stainless steel bowl. And in that stainless steel bowl, you will first peel your sweet potato, and you're going to find that that skin is going to come off nice and easy because you didn't oil it, you didn't salt and pepper it, so there's nothing to get it to adhere to the flesh. And after just, like I said, about an hour, hour and a half at 375, that sweet potato is going to be nice and cooked through. You're also going to notice a ton of caramelization on that sweet potato. The next things that you want to add to this, sweet potatoes, there's kind of a misconception between sweet potatoes and yams. When you go to the store and you find these beautiful, bright orange sweet potatoes, they're probably yams. Sweet potatoes are pretty much colorless. They have a very light orange color to them. But so that they look appetizing, you want to bring out that orange color that exists naturally in the potato. You just have to do stuff to boost it. So what we're going to do to boost it and to add flavor is going to be to add our sugar, our spices and our sweetness now. So the first thing that you're going to want to add is going to be about a tablespoon of paprika. That paprika adds a little bit of kick to it, not a ton, but its biggest job that we're throwing it in here for is going to be to color that sweet potato. The next thing that we're going to add in is going to be about a teaspoon of cinnamon. Then we're going to follow that with a teaspoon of garlic powder, a teaspoon of cumin, and about a tablespoon of brown sugar. That brown sugar is going to bring out the natural sweetness and add a little bit of smokiness from the molasses that exists in that and bring a nice even flavor component out in your whole entire sweet potato. So the next thing you're going to do is mash that all together. It'll all start to come together clean. And as it mixes in and all your spices come together, you want to start to stir it heavier so that that paprika spreads throughout. That paprika, again, is going to be what's going to give you your beautiful bright orange color that most people expect when they think of sweet potatoes. The next thing that you're going to add to that is going to be milk. Milk is just going to give it a creamy flavor and also add a little bit of lightness to it and allow it to whip to a little bit softer of a peak. So you're going to add your milk in, stir that all together. Once that's all stirred together, it's going to have cooled down because you will have added cold milk to it. That cold milk that's been added, you're going to want to heat that back up. So after your whole dish is finished and everything is whipped together, you're going to scrape that into a pan. Once that's back in the pan, you're going to heat that up. Same wrist toss that you did with the Brussels sprouts, you're going to do that with the sweet potatoes. That'll caramelize a little bit on the outside, and it'll heat everything back to center, and then that's ready to go onto the plate. The next thing that we're going to do with our duck, which should be finished at this point, we're going to start to slice that out and fan it so it has good presentation as we put it on the plate. So with duck, when you pull it out of the oven, the first thing that you want to do is let it rest. So there's residual heat that exists in everything that you've cooked. Once that comes out of the oven, that residual heat is going to continue to cook that duck breast. So if you like it medium rare, you pull it about a minute before it's actually at medium rare. You'll put it onto your tabletop and allow it to rest out. Allowing it to rest out allows for the muscle fibers to relax, and the juice, instead of being released from inside of the breast, starts to adhere to the muscle fiber. So you end up with a very nice, juicy dish that's got a lot of flavor to it. With that slicing process, you want to take your knife and go at a very, very heavy angle. You're going at about 45 degree angle, maybe even all the way down to a 35 degree angle. And you just want to slice that straight across. That's going to allow you to fan that out on the plate so that your finished product will have nice shape as you lay it down. And as a general rule in kitchens, we always try to go in odd numbers. So you're going to make cuts so that you end up with enough pieces to fan out where you've got either 5 pieces or 7 pieces. For your finished product, you're going to take your sweet potatoes, which should now be hot off the stove. Those will go onto your plate. Then you're going to add your Brussels sprouts. Those will go off to the side of the sweet potatoes, so you have a nice high stack of it. Then you should have a very large open white space on your plate. That very large open white space is where you want your duck, and you're going to fan that out so that you have nice presentation on it. So that the fat side is up, you can see the scoring that you did on the top of your duck.
The duck dish is magazine presentable, with just the right amount of brownness on the duck skin and the meat glistening pink. The sweet potatoes show bright orange contrast with the inviting green of the Brussels sprouts. This is holiday on a plate. The holidays are upon us, and you pretty much whipped this together, but I also know that you have a lot of experience and you've been in the kitchen for a long time. Do you have recommendation and advice to the home cook as to how to get ready for the holidays? Because many people get very flustered especially during that time of meal prep.
Absolutely. And it happens to all of us who work in kitchens. There's this constant flustered moment about 10, 15 minutes before you have to serve where you just want to quit and never do it ever again anymore. The easiest way to get around that is prep ahead of time. Most of the time when you see what we're doing in a kitchen, we've done a tremendous amount of prep before any of that has happened. So like today with the roasting of the sweet potatoes, you can roast those a day in advance and hold those in your refrigerator. With the Brussels sprouts, you can shave those up to 2 days in advance. All this is stuff that you can hold on to and have ready over a long stretch of time instead of trying to rush and get things done right before dinner. Then when it comes down to dinner time, you have about 15 minutes where you can throw this all together and end up with a beautiful dish that you spread out over a several number of days so that you're not spread so thin trying to get that done.
Do you have rules of thumb as to what can hold and what cannot hold? I think many people are, you know, they just don't know. They get confused. You know, can I keep the duck for a while or should I prepare that last? Right. So do you have rules of thumb with the meat versus vegetables?
Absolutely. Vegetables are always going to hold the longest. So anything that you've already cooked or if it's prepared to be cooked, vegetables, you're looking at a 2-day window where you've got plenty of time. You're not going to have spoilage. You're not going to have waste, anything like that. With the meat itself, with the stuff that we bring into the restaurant, we usually have our meat delivered about 2 or 3 days before we've actually utilized it. Now that may be broken down in that during that time. It may be processed to the point where we do scoring on it already, all those kind of things. So that minimally all we have to do is prepare that meat the day that we're actually doing anything with it. But you can bring it into advance as early as works for you, as long as you're not within that window where you have to worry about spoilage or shortages.
I know that you have it in your mind to think about how to prepare things. Do you have suggestions for someone at home as to how they could potentially, you know, outline, you know, do they, you know, should they just have everything already prepped or should they allow themselves hours or minutes as to when they should bring everything together?
Right. My recommendation on that is hours ahead of time. If you're doing this at home, you want to be able to go into it without stress. So the more time you allow yourself to think about, this is what I want to do on this step, this is what I have for that step. In a kitchen, we think rapid fire fast because we do it all the time, every day. And in your own home, you don't want to have to think that quickly or that rapidly. So my strong recommendation, things you see on TV, things you see in cookbooks, potentially plan that out and realize how I can put this a couple days in advance, I can put that a day in advance. All that pre-planning in your head will help you to move a little smoother into the actual preparation of the dish. And whether you actually follow through on that pre-planning, it helps to get that organized in your head to realize this step can be first, this step can be second, and so on and so on.
So that recommendation could be as you look at a recipe, and you can almost write out the times because you may have it better in your head, so write out how many minutes something might take.
Absolutely.
And then total everything together.
Absolutely. I have noticed as I have gotten older that the taking of notes is tremendously important. And so I can recommend that for the home cook too. The more notes that you write down, the more that you have in your head, the more that you have that composed, the easier it's going to be to transfer that over and actually prepare that dish the way you had intended. Whether it goes off to plan or not, you still have the best of intentions.
So is there anything else that you would recommend for someone that is cooking in the kitchen?
My biggest recommendation is do not be intimidated. You're never going to kill somebody. That was always my mother's biggest fear, is that she was going to do it wrong and we'd all die. That's never going to happen. So approach it with gusto, always. There's no reason to be afraid. There's no reason to step back. The worst thing that you can do is burn it. And if you do burn it, tell people that that was on purpose. It's the easiest way around that.
So you reinvent the titles of your recipe.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much and happy holidays to you.
To you as well. Thank you, Stella.
For this holiday season, I wish for you deliciousness and joy. Flavors Under the Big Sky has been reduced with the assistance of Ken Siebert. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For the recipes and more information, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.